Chapter 1.
When the nation is in its darkest peril, the great warrior sailor Darakhair shall be summoned from his eternal sleep by a rhythm beaten on his ancient drum. For his final pledge was that he would come to our aid when the drum sounded, and that we should call him when we sailed to meet the foe. Your Menu Folk Legend. Jedi Outpost, Endor, 12 weeks after the death of Mara Jade Skywalker. Ben Skywalker had thought it would be a simple matter of thumbing his lightsaber into life, screaming vengeance, or choked into silent grief, he didn't care which, and slicing Jason Solo's head from his body. He sat flicking the blade on and off, staring down the shaft of blue energy, and watching it vanish, only to snap back into vivid life over and over again. He saw his mother, who couldn't be summoned back again at the flick of a switch, although he would have given the rest of his life for one more chance to tell her how much he loved her. But the image that he wanted to erase, yet couldn't, was Jason Solo's face. So many people said Jason was a stranger now, but a stranger was someone you never loved or looked up to, and so their brutality or careless cruelty was just repellent detail, the distant stuff of Holonews bulletins. Family, though, family could hurt you like nobody else, and they didn't even have to torture you like Jason did to leave scars. The face of Jason that Ben would recall until the day he died was the one he saw on Cavan while he sat with his mother's body, the face that promised Ben they'd get whoever did that to her. And that was why it simply would not go away. There was something wrong about that face, something missing, or something there that shouldn't have been. Ben picked away at the memory, checking his chrono every few minutes, convinced that he'd been waiting for Aunt Leia for hours. I had the chance to kill him. Dad stopped me. Maybe I could have killed Jason without turning dark. Will I ever get another chance? Jedi had killed Sith before. They said Kenobi killed a Sith on Naboo, but nobody thought it was an instant passport to the dark side. Some dirty jobs had to be done. Ben had thought his absolute, all-consuming need to destroy Jason had passed, but it hadn't, and neither had his grief. It had simply shifted position. It ebbed and flowed, some days worse than others. He would not get over it. He would learn to live with the loss, somehow. But the galaxy had changed and would never return to normal. It was an alternate universe, nearly familiar enough for him to navigate, but where the most important landmarks were gone forever. Now he was ready to pour his heart out to Leia. There were some things he wasn't ready to tell his father. Luke Skywalker might have looked as if he was dealing with his grief, but Ben knew better, and if he told him what he really thought, Dad would kill Jason. He was sure of it. He'd snap. Ben had to be the responsible one now. But if I'm wrong, I'll only hurt Dad more. Nothing added up. I don't believe Alima killed Mom. Sith sphere or not, I just don't. How did Jason know where to find me on Cavan? How did he know I was there with my mother's body? Ben had thought it was odd at the time, even when the shock of finding her body had nearly paralyzed him. But even in shock, he'd had the presence of mind to record evidence at the scene, every bit of data he could grab, just as Captain Shevu had taught him. Jason had mind-rubbed him once. He wasn't going to let him rewrite history again. And that was my instinctive reaction. Even when I found Mom dead, something inside me said that was important. I'll trust that. Jedi would have said it was the certainty of the Force. Cops like Captain Shevu would have said that Ben's investigative training had kicked in. Either way, Ben had more questions than he had answers, but he was more sure each passing day that Jason, his own cousin, his own flesh and blood, really had killed his mother. He waited. Eventually, he heard two sets of footsteps coming down the passage, and had a sinking feeling that Luke might have met Leia in passing and decided to tag along. But when the doors opened, it was Leia and Jaina. "Ben?" Leia always had that calming tone that said everything was under control, even when it wasn't. "What's wrong?" "I've got some difficult things to say," he said. "You might not thank me, but I can't sit on it any longer." The accusation was meant solely for Leia, and for a moment he was reluctant to blurt it out in front of Jaina as well, but she needed to hear it.
"You know you can tell me anything," Leia said. "Do you want Jaina to leave us alone?"
"No, no. As long as you don't rush off and tell Dad, because he thinks I'm over the Jason thing now, and I don't want to start him worrying again." Jaina sat down next to him, leaning forward, as if she was ready to hug him if he burst into tears.
"It's okay. I won't say a word. And Mom's the diplomat. What's so bad that you can't tell Uncle Luke?"
Cut to the chase. The longer he built it up, the worse it would be. Ben concentrated on calm, rational language. "I don't think Alima Rar killed my mother," he said. The words hung in the air as if he could see them. "I still think Jason did." Leia just stood there, arms folded, but she didn't react. Jaina shifted a fraction on the seat. If anything, they seemed embarrassed. He waited in the agonizing silence.
"What makes you think that?" Leia asked at last.
"I'm not going to rely on what I feel," Ben said, "even though I feel it. I'm going by things that don't add up. You know what police look for? Captain Shevu taught me. Motive, means, opportunity. And family doesn't seem to mean much to Jason. Look at the things he's done to you and Uncle Han." Ben recalled Jaina's sudden exit from the Galactic Alliance military. "And you, Jaina, look what he tried to do to you."
"I know Jason's doing some terrible things, but let's go through this a step at a time," Leia said. "You've accused him before, but we're all pretty messed up lately. Why is this still eating at you?"
"The way he found me on Cavan."
"He's good at finding people in the Force, Ben."
"I was hiding, doing my shutdown act. He's not the only Jedi who can do that. He taught me to do it, and I taught Mom. I've even shown Dad how to do it, and he'll tell you. Once you switch out, even Master Amazing Super Smart Jason shouldn't have been able to find me. And he still walked straight up to me in a tunnel on a deserted planet that's the back end of beyond. That's not luck, and it's not finding me in the Force. He knew. And then there was the Sith meditation sphere that Lumia had." He'd kept it to himself all this time. The longer you kept a secret, the harder it got. If only he'd disobeyed Jason and told Dad about the thing. If only, maybe Mom would have still been alive. Ben would never know.
"What about the sphere?" said Jaina. "I found it on Zeost. I handed it over to Jason when I docked it in the Anakin Solo. Next time I see it, Lumia's driving."
Leia sucked in a little breath.
"Lumia was always adept at taking what she wanted."
"The Anakin Solo might be slack when it comes to stopping infiltrators, Aunt Leia, but
but I can't see Lumia just wandering in and stealing the sphere without someone knowing about it.
Okay, file all that under unexplained. How about motive?
Jaina seemed to be holding her breath. Leia looked away for a moment as if she was weighing the evidence. It didn't amount to much.
Yet.
How about the fact that Mara was in his way, like any good Jedi?
Said Jaina sourly.
No. Let's hear Ben's view.
Ben was theorizing now.
I spent a lot of time telling Mom about all the things Jason was asking me to do in the guard, and I could see it made her mad. I'm sure she bawled him out.
Okay, so that's motive, maybe. Now let's look at means.
Only a really skilled Jedi could ever take down Mom. Look at all the stuff Jason can do.
But poison? That's Alima's trademark.
So it's obvious to use it to draw suspicion elsewhere, isn't it?
Sweetheart, Alima had the sphere. She was in league with Lumia, we know that. And I'm sure Captain Shevu would confirm that people stick with one method of killing that they feel confident using. Alima spent the last year trying to kill as many of us as she could.
Ben was off and running down the behavioral path now.
Okay, Alima was crazy, but she didn't have a motive for killing Mom. It was always about you and Uncle Han.
He shook his head.
I don't buy it, because she'd have bragged about it to Jag if she'd done it. She'd have wanted us to know she got in one good shot to hurt us all, to hurt you. And then there's opportunity. She was in the area, yes, but we also know for sure that Jason was in the Hapen system around the time it happened.
Leia really looked as if she was taking it seriously. She hadn't rolled her eyes or told him he was being stupid or even rushed to defend Jason. That wasn't a surprise, given what Jason had done to her, his own mother.
Well, it doesn't clear him, she said at last. But it's not exactly enough to take to a judge, is it? He could have been in the Hapen system planning to kidnap Alana.
It was a good alibi. Jason couldn't have committed a murder because he was too busy planning an abduction, Your Honor. Ben strove for a rational tone.
Aunt Leia, why do you think Mom hung on in corporeal form for so long? Why do you think her body disappeared just as Jason showed up at her funeral? Don't you think the Force might be saying something to us? I can't stop thinking about it. I've turned it over and over in my head for weeks. I daren't discuss it with Dad, but it's driving me crazy.
Leia took a few steps forward and squatted in front of him to put her hands on his knees.
Ben, you said you recorded everything you could at the scene.
Yeah, because nobody can mind rub that or tell me I imagined it.
Have you found anything in the recordings?
Ben stood his ground. He was sure. More sure every day now.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm going to find out exactly what happened, Aunt Leia. I have to. And I'm going to do it by the book, because I need to be certain or I won't be able to live with it.
What if you find evidence that it's not Jason?
Asked Jaina.
Are you going to accept what the provable facts tell you?
Ben had committed himself to take the rational, legal path rather than that of intuition and force senses.
I don't want to get the wrong person. Whatever I feel about Jason for the other things he did to me, I don't want to pin it on him if that means Mom's real killer is still walking around. And if it really was Alima? Well, fine. The result's the same.
Jaina looked into his face for a few long moments and then smiled sadly. With Leia still squatting in front of him, wearing that same sorrowful expression, Ben felt pinned down by their tolerant doubt. Maybe they were humoring him. Well, it didn't matter. He'd stated his case, and he was going to prove it, because he couldn't carry on with his life until he got answers. And he would carry on with his life. When Jory LeCouf had been killed saving him, and he'd been drowning in guilt, Mara had told him that the best way to honor that sacrifice was to live well, to the maximum, and not waste a gift so dearly bought. He'd do that for his mother. He'd live for her. Bastion, Imperial Remnant, Admiral Pelion's residence. Gilad Pelion, still healthy in his 90s and with no intention of fading into senility, was playing feed quoits on the lawn when his aide entered the walled garden at a brisk walk. The admiral didn't take his eyes off the target, a short pole shaped like the flower spike of a Sezith water lily, one of a dozen set in the shallow ornamental pond. But he could see all the signs of urgency in his peripheral vision.
"Yes, Vitor?"
Pelion held the quoit between thumb and forefinger, resting its weight on his palm.
"I hope you're rushing to tell me that the chief has acquired Jason Solo's entrails and is braising them for dinner."
"Not quite, Admiral."
"Life is full of disappointments."
"A military attaché from the Galactic Alliance is here to see you."
Vitor Rige had saved Pelion's life in the Yuuzhan Vong War, and now he defended him from all other equally irksome visitors. Anyone from the GA fitted the description these days.
"Shall I send him away?"
"Remind him that he should make an appointment if he wants an audience, not drop by to solicit me like some door-to-door tradesperson."
"I think he might have been anticipating that. He handed me this note."
Rige rustled. Pelion turned his head to look at a neatly sealed flimsy square, pale blue and bearing handwriting. It would be some sop from the strutting little demagogue Solo or one of his minions, some invitation or other public relations exercise to make his junta look more respectable. Pelion focused again on the lily, and tossed the quoit with a practiced hand. It fell neatly over the spike and came to rest on its base.
"Open it for me,"
he said, taking another quoit in his hand.
"If you think it might raise my blood pressure, throw it in the bin. If not, it can wait until I finish my game."
Feed quoits was a pursuit that taught patience and concentration, as well as providing gentle exercise. It was always played on water. Careless throws meant fishing around in a pond with your hand to recover the quoit. Some said that it had once been played with carnivorous fish in the water, and began life as a hunting technique on Naboo. But Pelion had quite enough predators in his life without adding that refinement. He settled for nothing more dangerous than a wet sleeve when he missed the target.
"Well?"
Pelion lined up a more difficult target, the right-hand spike at the back that required an up-and-over technique to clear the middle row.
"Is it going to give me an aneurysm, or just provoke spluttering rage?"
"I really think you should read the message, sir," said Rige, "if only for amazement value."
He held out the unfolded flimsy with a bemused smile, and Pelion took it.
"You'll be annoyed, I think."
It was handwritten, or at least fashioned to look like it, and it was an invitation after all, but not quite the one that he was expecting. The Joint Chiefs of State of the Galactic Alliance respectfully request a meeting to discuss a mutual aid treaty with the Imperial Remnant, and the addition of its assets to the GA fleet in exchange for substantial benefits. A translucent green official seal was stamped across Jason's signature. No sign that Admiral Neothel had seen this then. Amon Kal should have known better than to back a little despot like Solo, so perhaps she wasn't involved. But then Neothel had her own agenda, and it almost certainly didn't include Jason as a valued co-worker for life. The brat. Pelion had resigned rather than be forced to work with him. It hadn't been personal when it started. Pelion simply objected to the creation of an unaccountable, slightly outside the chain of command, rather seedy secret police force, which was then put under the command of someone who had never worn a uniform in his life. The dislike, now fermented into a full-blown loathing, had come later, nourished simply by watching the Holonews and listening to military intelligence reports.
Retired. No, I was forced out, and I haven't forgotten that. No, Jason, you cannot play with my ships, he snorted, nor can you buy them.
He crumpled the flimsy in his hand, feeling the fragile seal crack, and tossed it back to Rige.
I can see no merit in aligning the Empire with a regime that has no current bearing on our interests.
I'll return this to the attaché as it is, then, shall I, sir?
Said Rige, tilting his head slightly to consider it.
I think it's quite eloquent.
A gesture is worth a thousand words, but two often suffice.
Rige walked back down the hedge-lined path without a sound, to deliver the rejection to the attaché. A good man, loyal as a son. Pelion had long suspected he was, it was all too possible, but was reluctant to seek confirmation and be disappointed, because he missed Minar terribly. It was a dreadful thing to be unable to acknowledge that Minar had been his son. Pelion felt he had denied him even in death. He wanted no more hopes dashed, and had made generous provision for Rige's future. But if somebody didn't put a dent in Master Solo's ambitions, the future for Rige and everyone else would be bleak. It wasn't actually true that the GA had no effect on the Empire. Some things couldn't be avoided or ignored, however far away.
Perhaps I was a fool not to retire earlier. But I'm not dead yet. I still have some fight in me, and I'll be hanged before I give in to the whims of a civilian playing soldiers. It's a pity that his aunt was killed. She'd have lost patience with him eventually, and then he'd have had a good thrashing. Oh, yes.
Pelion threw the rest of the quoits, enjoying a private fantasy about playing the game the Naboo way with a shoal of angry blembies cruising in the water and making Jason Solo retrieve the misses. He was definitely not dead yet. Chief of State's Suite, Senate Building, Coruscant, 2 days after the return of the Anakin Solo. Darth Kitus stared at the crumpled note in the tray and wondered what Pelion thought of him. It didn't matter, but he was curious.
"Perhaps I didn't explain myself clearly enough," he said. "What do you think, Tahiri?"
She examined the note and shrugged. He wondered if she was trying to sense something from the flimsy, some clue about Pelion's state of mind.
"I think you're talking to the wrong person," Tahiri said. "It's the Moff's backing you need, not Pelion's. He's the last person who'd help you."
Kitus thought it was more insurance than help, because he had no real sense of being under threat. The Confederation might have looked numerically equal, but numbers often didn't equate to strength. but he planned to bring the war to a quick end, not to tiptoe along some line of status quo. And for that, he needed an injection of numbers. The Imperial Remnant had not only the hulls and hardware, but more importantly, also the doctrine and high-caliber personnel to make their assets count. They were very much his grandfather's legacy. The Remnant's shock troops were said to be as excellent as Vader's 501st, and that kind of efficiency was what he needed in his order of battle. The only barrier was Pelion, now too old to bend with the winds of change. He had been a great admiral once, but even though he'd retired, voluntarily or otherwise, he was still blocking the Skylane. Admirals didn't retire, of course. They were always subject to recall. Pelion might still be biding his time.
Tahiri, to get the Moffs to back me, I need to be endorsed by Pelion,
Kaida said.
It's more than his position as Bastion's head of state. I can bypass figureheads when I need to, but the old boy is still very much hands-on, and he has enormous sway over the Moffs. They would commit their forces to the GA for the right reward, but not as long as Pelion opposes it.
And does he oppose it? I can see why he wouldn't exactly trust you.
No, I'm not his favorite person, and I suspect he regards Neothel as a traitor, in that stiff upper lip way of his. But this isn't a refusal, I think, just a gesture. I believe he wants to be wooed.
Tahiri's mind was calculating visibly.
So what's the right incentive for the Moff who has everything?
More of it, Tahiri. More. Everybody likes more.
But more of what, exactly?
Territory.
Must be a tough job finding parking for all those Star Destroyers, mustn't it, Jason?
Kaidas had to admit she was sometimes more entertaining than Ben, even if he didn't like being called Jason.
I was thinking of Bill Bringy or Borlias, actually. Maybe both, if I have to. Shipyards and banking. I think the Moffs will like that, if I can get Pelion to see sense.
Tahiri never asked if the worlds in question had been consulted about becoming bargaining chips, and Kaidas wasn't sure if she didn't think politically, or she took it as read, that he would make it happen with or without their consent.
"He's a pragmatist," she said, "and he wants the best for his little empire."
"He likes his honor better."
Kaidas smiled and reached for the pile of data pads. There were a couple of items that troubled him still sitting in view.
"But I think he needs time to consider this, and perhaps a visit from someone persuasive, preferably in a smart suit and shoes, Tahiri."
She gave him a withering glance.
"You want me to see him?"
"I hope you'll do better in this task than the last."
"I've done my best, Jason."
"Yet you can't find the Jedi base."
"And obviously neither can you."
"Show me you can complete a mission. Talk to Pelion."
"He wouldn't see the military attaché. What makes you think he'll agree to see me?"
"Pelion is a gentleman, Tahiri. He'll see you. Not only because you're pretty and charming, but because someone will let the Moffs know the nature of the deal he'll be offered, and so they'll ask him questions that he'll feel obliged to answer."
Kitus already had his networks set up. Floating the idea through informal channels was quick and easy, but Pelion had to feel it was his idea. There was no hurting the man. That Corellian blood made him very contrary.
"Imperials need an empire, you see. It's what they do. How can he turn that down?"
"Why didn't you calm him and put it to him straight? Even if he hates you, he'd respect directness."
"I was just testing the water with the letter. Now that I know how resistant he is, I'll go to Plan B and get the Moffs excited about two shiny new acquisitions, and by a gentle process of osmosis, speeded up by your charm, he'll say yes, without being made to feel I co-opted him after ending his long and glorious career sooner than he wished."
Tahiri sat back on the edge of the desk and looked out over sky lanes marked by the winking lights of speeders.
"You plan every possible move, don't you?"
"I don't guess," said Kitus. "There are too many wild cards being dealt as it is, some of which are showing up now."
He picked up the first data pad on the pile. Wild cards, indeed. Intelligence reports confirmed that Corellia had placed an order for the Mandalorian's Besulik fighter. It was faster than an X-Wing, armored in virtually impregnable Mandalorian iron, Beskar, and for sale to anyone who had the credits. It was one of those destabilizing things that changed the course of wars. A subtle man, Fett. Kitus had been waiting to see what form his revenge would take for killing his daughter, thinking in terms of pure terminal violence, personal retribution. But the old mercenary was showing signs of playing a much, much longer and more destructive game.
"Off you go, Tahiri. Come back to me with your timetable and strategy for getting an audience with Admiral Pelion and signing him up to the cause."
Kitus would have to do something about the Besulik. The simplest option was to buy a squadron for the GA, even if that rankled. But if Fett could play the longer game, so could he. The fighter was a joint project with the Verpine of Roach, part of a cozy mutual aid treaty between Caldabe and the Verpine Hives. Kitus put the Verpine down on his list of beings to educate later. He would also steer clear of Mandalore for the time being. He had more urgent issues in front of him. Fondor was still a major irritant, churning out warships for the Confederation at its orbital yards. It was a continuing threat, and it lay close to rich mineral resources in an asteroid belt. It built star destroyers. Assets like that couldn't be allowed to remain in enemy hands. So he would deal with Fondor as his next priority. He picked up his comlink and keyed in the code of his closest and most irritating colleague, Admiral Cha Neothel, Joint Chief of State of the GA. He didn't see eye to eye with admirals lately.
"Admiral," he said cheerfully, "we really have to do something about Fondor."